The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
On this episode of Revelator, I welcome music guest The String Theory. I also cover the top movies at the box office, Super Bowl 48, the death of Philip Seymour Hoffman, and much, much more, only on Revelator. Welcome to Revelator. I'm your host, Ryan. Thanks for hanging out with me, as always. And I got a nice show for you tonight. We really do. Really up-and-coming young band from the Cincinnati area. The String Theory will be joining us. Definitely stick around. Some really cool dudes and some really, really raw, energetic music on the show. On this particular show, episode number 45 of Revelator, pushing up to number 50 right now. So we got to plan something fun for the 50th. I'm not sure quite what's in store for us yet, but I'll come up with something fun. But I want to lead off tonight with a story we've actually covered on and off for quite a while now. This is probably the last update, unless something interesting happens. But for those of you who've been listening to the show for a while, you know we've been covering Katrina. This is the woman from Brazil who's been auctioning off her virginity unsuccessfully. Will someone please have sex with this woman, for Christ's sakes? Gosh, she's like showering with a raincoat on, right? Unbelievable. This Brazilian woman, who's tried several times, four times, in fact, to sell her virginity to the highest bidder, has all of a sudden changed her mind. She said no more auctions, she told the Huffington Post. She says, I gave up. Instead, the 21-year-old Brazilian beauty will lose her virginity via a TV show. That makes sense, right? It's a reality show based in Brazil. And her first sex partner will also get an award of $1 million. Wow. That's a heck of a come right there. You know, I mean, I wonder what the application form is. I tried to pull it up. The application had actually been taken down. So I don't know if this is still going to happen or not, or you know, what's going on there with this Brazilian TV show. I actually put up the application. Just curiosity alone, of course. I mean, there's $1 million at stake and sex with a Brazilian woman. So what the hell, right? Don't tell my wife. so I had to find out what the application looked like. I did, you know. And unfortunately, you know, I couldn't find it. So I'm just wondering, like, what kind of things are they asking on here? Like, you know, or like, does she want to know, like, you know, what kind of car you drive? Like, the basic things, you know, what do you do for a living? You know, do you have to put your penis size down on the application? How many women you've slept with up to her? How many virgins have you had sex with? You know, like, maybe she, at this point, you know, as much as she's auctioned off her virginity, you know, unsuccessfully, I might add. I want her to fill out an application, I think, at this point, you know? I mean, gosh, just go do what most 21-year-old girls do. Go drink too much fruity drinks at the bar and go home and make a mistake, you know? I mean, come on now. Jeez, get over it already. Heck, some guy in Japan actually tried to pay her $780,000, and she turned him down because of legality issues with the filmmaker from Australia, Justin Sisley. If you remember, this is back in October of 2012. This has been going on for quite some time, so she had a current bid on virginswanted.com, and the current bid was actually at $440,000, and then the site is down. She pulled the auction off for whatever reason, so obviously maybe the guy didn't fill out the application completely. I don't know. And I wonder how many, 20, it says up here, 20 different men will compete for her virginity. Now, are they competing for her virginity, or are they competing for the $1 million? Personally, if I'm going to be on that show, I'm going for the $1 million. I can care less about the Brazilian. You know, that's just the cherry on top, so to speak, right? No pun intended there. Moving on tonight, Hot for Teacher is back. You remember a while back we did a teacher who was actually suspended in Massachusetts for nude photos, Kathleen Pearson. She's actually been reinstated at the school as of January 17th. She was laid off because of, you know, some scandally clad photos of her naked. Now, she does work at a elementary school, Apparently, some of the photos ended up in the principal's desk. In a statement obtained by the Sentinel, superintendent of the schools, Andrew Revenel, said, after reviewing the relevant information, Miss Pearson was notified Monday that she could return to work. And all the men in the faculty were like, all right, yeah, welcome back, Miss Pearson. Nice to have you.
Ryan.
Can I get you anything? Yes.
When he says when he was done researching, does that mean masturbating to the pictures?
I don't know. I don't know if all these photos are stuck together or not. I really don't. I can only assume. But, I mean, judging by what little information I know about superintendents, just going by the superintendents and principals that we had at our high school, Mike, I could only assume that those photos are, that, you know, lost in the shuffle, you know?
Exhausted.
Exactly. Maybe they made their way to the guidance counselor's office, you know? So, hey, you know they did. You know, old Sloppy Joe would have loved that. You know,
that or Mrs. Becker. But anyway, it's another story.
Right. Yeah. No, but you know, obviously, you know, the 23-year-old had her fan support, and I'm sure you know a lot of the actually a lot of the teachers and even some parents actually came out in support of her as well, and rightfully so. I mean. She didn't intentionally let these photos leak. Someone obviously was trying to dupe her, which is wrong. But it just goes to show you again that if you want to, you know, pose naked and do things like that, by all means, go right ahead and do it. No one should stop you. But remember that, you know, sometimes there are consequences. So obviously, it's going to work out for her. She's getting her job back and she continue being an educator. And I'm sure, again, the male faculty is very happy about that. Welcome back, Miss Pearson. Looking good. That spring lineup's coming out. Anyway, I saw this story a while back, and I can't remember if we talked about it or not, because we do so many crazy, wild stories about people getting beat up over food and stuff. I couldn't remember if we talked about this one or not. And lo and behold, where are these people from? That's right. Good old Florida. The good old state of Florida. Keeping humanity at a lower level since they've been Florida, I would assume. This particular individual, 35-year-old Alvin Kenneth, goes by Chico, was caught beating Joshua Andrews with a baseball bat at a Super Bowl party. It's a barbecue beatdown, baby. I don't know if he was, you know, maybe he was just doing a reenactment of the Seahawks beating up the Denver Broncos, which we'll talk about a little later in the show. This guy apparently was at this particular Super Bowl party. And an argument took place well after the game. You know, nothing good ever happens way late at a Super Bowl party. It just, that doesn't happen that way. You know, everybody gets hammered and drunk and eats buffalo wings and drinks too much, and all of a sudden the baseball bat comes out, you know. It is almost baseball season, right? And he ends up beating this guy half to death over some type of dispute. I don't know. Maybe the dispute is over chicken wings. I don't know. It doesn't really clarify here. He actually beats him unconscious to the point where he is actually unable to speak. And it turns out this guy actually died. So now I feel bad about him getting beat up, you know, over chicken wings or something. So this guy actually ends up dying this past Sunday. This is according to the FirstCoastNews.com. So this guy, Chico, I don't know what his batting average is. Obviously, it's pretty good. He killed this guy. But, I mean, come on. Really? I mean, a Super Bowl party, you got to beat a guy to death over what? Over what? A dispute of the game or a bet or something? Come on. Jeez. Unbelievable. And people were going absolutely crazy over little stupid things, you know? And anyway, here's another fight at a Super Bowl party. We'll just keep it on going here. This one really takes the cake, though. I guess this is more of the Evander Holyfield category. This guy actually bites off his brother's ear during a Super Bowl party fight. Now, Mike, I don't have brothers. You've got brothers. I mean, you guys obviously, you know, were obviously in some altercations. Did it ever occur to you to want to rip one of your brother's ears off during a Super Bowl party?
No.
That didn't come to that, right?
No, choke outs, right? You choke them till they pass out. Right. You know, kick to the nuts, but
yeah.
I never thought about dismembering.
Yeah, no dismemberment at your household. But yeah, this guy, the older brother, is being released on a $15,000 bail. Is now facing a first degree assault charges. Yeah, for basically biting his brother Zero off at a Super Bowl party. They started roughhousing, I guess, at the game, and the two were intoxicated, end up, you know, to fisticuffs, and the guy ended up, you know, biting his brother Zero off. I always told you to listen to me. You never listen to me. Ear. Unbelievable. Eat wings, baby. You know what? Super Bowl, you know, this past week, you know, obviously a lot of people were eating wings and such. And, you know, they always do the Wing Bowl in Philadelphia. The eating machine Molly Shuler has done it again. This is according to Philly.com. The 120-pound mom of four set a new record at the 22nd annual Wing Bowl that Friday morning, devouring, get this, 363 wings in 30 minutes. I'll think about that for a second. I'm a big dude, man, and I could put some wings away, okay? I didn't get this figure by not eating wings, but I tell you what, there is no way in the world I could eat 363 wings in 30 minutes. Absolutely not. I don't even think I could eat 30 wings in 30 minutes, okay? Shuler takes the top prize of $22,000, says she pulled off the greatest performance in Wing Bowl history, the news outlet wrote, blowing past the old record, which was 337 wings. I'm kind of getting queasy thinking about eating that many wings, 363 chicken wings. Ugh. You know, she's actually becoming one of the number one ranked women competitive eaters in the world. And she's done actually a couple different competitions in 2013, including the Beef Patty Eating Championship. She ate 8 patties in 1 minute and 46 seconds. She was at a fried mushroom eating contest, reportedly setting a new national record for fried mushroom eating, devouring a whopping 9 pounds of cooked fried mushrooms in 8 minutes. Wow. I mean, if there was ever a need for someone to be in the Charmin commercial, it is definitely Molly Shuler. My God. You know, I mean, you know, she has 4 kids. You know, obviously she's a mom. I assume that she's married, you know. I mean, you know, and her husband passes gas or, you know, takes a crap in the bathroom. She's like, I just ate 9 pounds of mushrooms. Move over, honey. Watch out. You might not want to go in there. Can we get Molly some poopery? That's probably what you get her for her birthday or Valentine's Day coming up, you know? Just, you know, hook her up with some poopery or something, right? Because I'm sure her skid marks are as tenacious as mine. Unbelievable. In her own words, Molly said, just because you're a woman does not mean you can't eat. That's right. 363 wings, a 4-pack of Charmin, and a little spritz of poopery, and no one will ever know the difference. Now, let's tone it down a little bit. This is a story that, man, you know, we've talked a lot about this on the show with, you know, past musicians and artists passing away to drugs and alcohol and those type of things. And on Super Bowl Sunday, Philip Seymour Hoffman was found dead in his apartment, in his Manhattan apartment. He believed, you know, obviously a drug overdose of heroin. The actor had been battling the abuse much through his 20s into his 30s. He underwent a detox treatment in May of 2013 for substance abuse, including heroin. Just really, really sad news. He was recently in The Hunger Games, which is a widely successful film, and he was great, and he's been great in a lot of movies, and really, really tragic. I don't know what more to add there than that. There's, other than, and you look back at his career, at only the age of 46, a man who has done quite a lot in the film and industry, and you look back, he originally got his start on Law and Order in 1991, an episode called The Violence of Summer, where he was a defendant in a rape case. And he got his breakthrough film was in 1992, which was Scent of a Woman. I believe Al Pacino starred in that movie, which is a great film, by the way. Hoo-ah! But also, you know, a lot of different colleagues and fans have been coming out, and, you know, obviously a very brilliant talent, a very skilled actor. He won Academy Award in 2005 for Capote. He was outstanding in that film. And some other movies I thought were worth mentioning that, you know, maybe you're not aware of that he was in, but Some of the ones I really enjoy too, Boogie Nights, Charlie Wilson's War, Big Lebowski, of course, Almost Famous, The Ides of March, and Capote, as I mentioned, and a film that I really, really enjoy being in radio, and that is the movie Pirate Radio. He's outstanding in that movie, a really underrated film, about basically pirate radio in London, England. I encourage anyone to go out and check any of those movies out. Mike, do you have any Philip Seymour Hoffman movies that you can recall off the top of your head, man?
None that you didn't already mention. I mean, The Big Lebowski is my favorite. I mean, he was a phenomenal actor, but the role he played in The Big Lebowski was just hilarious. And just everything was dramatic and magnificent. And, you know, he would open the doors with such grandeur, and it was just so ridiculous. I haven't seen him in the new Hunger Games, so I'm actually looking forward to seeing him in that. And for those of you that haven't seen Capote but have Netflix streaming, it's actually, I think, still on there right now for free. I mean, it's not free, but go check it out. It's a phenomenal movie.
Yeah, he's outstanding. It was 2005. He won the Academy Award. He was nominated 3 or 4 other times for Best Supporting Actor. The cool thing about Philip Seymour Hoffman was his ability to play just any character. I mean, you look at, you know, Boogie Nights, Charlie Wilson's War, Big Lebowski, Pirate Radio, Almost Famous. He was outstanding in that too. Ides of March. I mean, really a lot of different characters, and the ability to play a lot of different roles, which made him such a unique talent. And to have him go this way and that suddenly at the age of 46 is very tragic. So I would encourage anyone out there, if you know someone who's struggling with any type of addiction whatsoever, even no matter how big or how small you may think it is, you know, reach out to them. You know, you never know, you know, what someone's going through, and don't beat them up over it or anything like that. You know, try to lend a helping hand, you know, and it's always hard when you hear stuff like this. And just kind of a bummer when you hear something like that. You know, you never think, you know, someone like that's going to go. And you know, I unfortunately have had that in my life where, you know, friends have passed too soon. And Mike, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So if you know anyone out there who may be struggling with any type of addiction, I'll definitely reach out to them, you know. And I'll leave it at that. We'll move on tonight. What better way than take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office, starting with number 10, working our way up. Number 10, The Wolf of Wall Street, $3.4 million. I, Frankenstein, I, awful, $3.7 million. American Hustle, $4.6 million. Labor Day, $5 million. Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit, $5.3 million. Lone Survivor, $7.1 million. The Nut Job, $7.2 million. That Awkward Moment. I like how The Nut Job and That Awkward Moment follow one another in the list. $8.7 million. The movie Frozen, still at number 2 in the box office at 11 weeks in the box office at $359 million, made $8.9 million this past weekend. And for whatever reason, the movie Ride Along is still at number 1. I expect that to change with some of the big movies coming out this weekend, including the Lego Movie, which it looks really, really good. But anyway, Ride Along made $12 million at the box office at number 1. And ladies and gentlemen, The String Theory will be joining us in just a moment. Let's take a listen to one of their tracks right now here on Revelator.
To the stars.
thanks for hanging out with me. And just like AA meetings, I'll have you introduce yourselves and what you do with the band.
Awesome. I'm Tristan. I play drums.
I'm Andrew. I play bass.
I'm David. I play guitar and sing.
Very cool. Well, gentlemen, thanks for hanging with us, man. I appreciate you guys, cutting some time out for us. Now, the album, much like the single we just heard, Falling Like the Sun, is set to be released, I believe, February 25th, if I'm not mistaken. This is your guys' debut album. How excited are you guys to make a big push right now to get some ears on this, man?
I'm really excited.
We're really excited. Yeah.
It's somewhat of a dream to have an album.
Yeah.
A physical album at that.
Right, yeah. Well, I think the energy is definitely there in the track we just heard, and obviously I think with the sound, you guys obviously have a pretty diverse, sound together. Talk to me about your musical influences, both early in life as a youth, and also some of your current influences.
Tristan, you want to go first?
I listen to lots of nerd rock, so. Rush and Dream Theater, so they're kind of playing really like their drummers translate into what I try to do, although I simplify it, especially for this music, so that's what I listen to.
Or not complicated enough for you.
And that's all I listen to, mainly. It's not all I listen to, but whatever. Andrew?
I listen to a lot of like alternative and like screamo and post-hardcore. That's mainly my thing. It's kind of funny because I grew up with my brother's taste in music, and he listened to a lot of like Metallica and Limp Bizkit, if you want to believe that.
David, how about yourself, man?
Oh, it's my turn now. Well, a funny story. I was born to Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles on this tape. And, the whole, I think it was that and then the rest of the White Album on one side. And then on the other side was the John Spencer Blues Explosion album, Orange, if you've ever heard that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it was, it went right from, Here Comes the Sun, right into, that song Blues X-Man, in the hospital.
That's definitely an interesting transition. Now, is there any correlation with that in the title of the album, Falling Like the Sun?
Not necessarily. Maybe subconsciously.
It's destiny that David was there.
Yeah.
No, go ahead, Ben.
I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, man. The rest is just my mom was a deadhead, so I grew up with Dead and listen to all the blues, all the old school blues when I was little. But, I like punk rock a lot. When I was little in grade school, I'd sing, the Misfits and the Ramones and stuff. And I listen to all kinds of everything now. But, yeah.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Now, do you guys recall the first concert you ever went to?
Who wants to start with that?
Tristan?
Oh, you had to pick me.
Yep.
Wasn't it Backstreet Boys? Yeah, I think it was.
Very first concert was the Backstreet.
It was Backstreet Boys. There we go.
Your first real concert.
My first real concert. I don't even remember. I've been to too many.
Backstreet Boys.
I'm still going to say Backstreet Boys.
I wish I was there. My first actual concert, I went to see Under Oath. That was my first concert, and they were playing with Let Live and Straight from the Path and Times of Grace. It was a killer show.
My first actual concert that I actually asked to be taken to was the Dropkick Murphys on their tour of the Meanest of Times. I was 8. Yeah. Yeah, it was an awesome show.
Very cool. Well, it's no Backstreet Boys.
No, it's a couple leaps and bounds from the Backstreet Boys.
I would have gone to see the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah. Well, I mean, were they good? I mean, they
came around with Boys to Men. I was kind of upset I did not go to that show.
Synchronized dancing, the whole deal.
Come to town, actually.
That's no Backstreet well, Boys, though.
No,
please.
Yeah, this could go on. Oh, man. Well, tell you what, man. I want to talk about how you guys, you know, first got together, how you guys all met. You guys got kind of like high school buddies, or talk about how you guys first met.
David knows how we met.
Yeah. Just
go.
Okay. I actually went to different schools than Tristan and Andrew, but all my friends, because I went to grade school with a bunch of people that went to their high school, Simon Kenton, so I always hung out with people from Simon Kenton. And one of my friends at the time had a birthday party, and we had like this crappy little band that was playing at his birthday party, but Andrew was invited, and he showed up, and he was playing, and the bass was there, and like I was playing guitar, and he like brought his bass with him and he started playing. I think it was Schism by Tool, wasn't it?
That wasn't my bass. That was Aaron's bass.
It was? I thought you brought yours.
Why would I buy BC Rich?
No, I specifically remember you brought your bass.
No.
Really?
Whatever. Not the birthday party. I brought my bass when we decided to jam together as a whole.
That's right. But yeah, he was playing Schism. I'm like, oh my God, this guy's amazing. So we started jamming together, and we've played with a couple other drummers. We've been playing together like 2 or 3 years now.
Yeah.
And then Tristan went to school with Andrew, and they knew each other from high school, and we went over after breaking up a band with the drummer before him. We jammed with him a couple times, and it was really, really cool. And we've been playing together for a little more than a year now. So that's how that all went.
Right on. Now, those first, you know, obviously, you know, getting together, do you guys recall like your, you know, the first, like real songwriting session you guys had together? And, what were some of the, how did that come to be where like, you know, you guys had these songwritings, like, you know what, this is going to turn into something. And then, you know, year and a half later, you have this album. Is that just kind of one of those things that just kind of, you guys just seem to click that way?
Yeah. I mean,
I think so. Yeah.
It started out a little rough.
Yeah, it was kind of rough at first, but I mean,
we didn't know what we were influenced by. So we were working with a completely different drummer. The drummers we worked with all played like standard rock and blues. And then we have Tristan, who listens to like you said, Rush and Dream Theater. And he knows how to do all these like really interesting things. And it's like, oh, we don't know how to do that. So we kind of morphed around him.
Yeah. And like, the first jam session we had, I think like one of the first real songs the three of us put out, like wrote, was a track called The Organism, which is on the album.
Yeah.
But since there, like from that song, it was like almost every practice we'd pump out a couple tunes and, you know, we'd write to meet set times for shows that was just magically booked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of rushing to meet like a certain criteria, like, oh, we have a 30-minute set, we have no material, and then so we just wrote it on a practice.
Yeah.
And now, since we've been playing, we weeded out the crap, and now we got a good album.
Yeah.
Well, what we think is good, hopefully people will like it.
It's all so organic, though. Like, writing songs is just, like, honestly, like, so easy with you guys. Like, it just all just kind of, like, comes out and just wraps up, and it's always, like, interesting.
Well, something. I mean, never, I think that the tracks bored. People are hearing tonight are a good indication of, you know, obviously an organic and even kind of raw too. I think the album, the tracks I've heard off the album are really raw, man. I really dig it, man. It just something about it just kind of brings you in. You guys played a couple shows. I know you guys have some shows coming up, and my old stomping grounds in Columbus, Ohio, coming up mid February. Talk to me about a couple of first shows. Any first show mishaps that you guys recall that, you know?
A lot of those.
All of them.
Tell them about the where you forgot half your drum set.
Oh, yeah. We were playing this gig at, I think it was a band challenge.
Yeah,
Madison. At Madison Theater, which is a kind of a bigger venue where we're from. And, yeah, I forgot, like, half my kit, and we're loading up drums on stage, and I'm like, did you guys get the floor toms out of the, or one of the rack toms out of the car? And they're like, you didn't even put it in there. And so I just kind of had to make do with what I had. That was a mishap.
We had to muscle through the humiliation of that.
Our first show that we played, the three of us played together, was at this this small bar, and yeah, we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. All right, okay.
Nice. Let's talk about this. Yeah, we wrote a bunch of songs. They were obviously really incomplete ideas, but we tried our best. It was an honest effort. But I remember Tristan was nervous as hell, and he sped up the songs. I didn't know. I was looking at David, who was – we were all kind of struggling, but I kind of took my frustration out on David. I flipped him off on stage because we messed up By the Way by Red Hot Chili Peppers, which is one of my favorite songs of all time. And I looked at David. I flipped him off on stage, and I just – I backhanded him.
I just remember being like, it's not my fault.
I know, it's Tristan. I still have yet to get him for that.
And then David got, he was getting shocked in the face by the microphone because of polarity on that stage at the bar. Like, it sucked.
Or plugging a power head into a powered speaker, and that didn't run over very well.
Imagine not.
We're completely very happy and noticed that nothing caught fire.
Yeah.
Right.
That would have made the show really cool. We would have been forgiven for our awful set. Yeah. Right.
There's all kinds of troubles we seem to be overcoming every single show we play, but
we had too many troubles recently.
Not recently. Yeah. It's getting better. We're getting there.
But I think that, that comes with being a band and kind of cutting your teeth and getting out there and doing it, and obviously you guys are gearing that way now. With the release, you have a handful of shows coming up here in the next month or so. What are your guys' future plans as we head into 2014, into spring, summer?
That's a good question. I mean, I get like as much as we can. We're trying to push it as far as we can.
Yeah, that's the right
play out of where we're from, play more out of the Cincinnati area and try to branch out into deeper into Ohio and Indiana surrounding areas and just get around, really.
Yeah.
That's our goal. Cause
kind of
a small local band.
Yeah.
It is.
And I can easily guess down south because I used to live in Florida for 9 years, so I know a lot of people down there.
Cool, man.
National act wanted to take us on tour or something, that would be awesome.
Yeah, totally cool with that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of bands out there that are, definitely in that realm. There's a lot of bands that have been around a long time that are kind of independent now, too, that, seem to do quite a bit of that. 10 years, Taproot, a lot of those guys, are kind of branching out on their own and taking a lot of bands under their wing, So, definitely, I think that option for a band like you guys is definitely out there for you. Now, one thing, before we move on to the interview, you're going to be in Columbus here in a couple weeks. You got to look up Thurman's Cafe, and you guys have to try the Thurminator. I believe maybe between all three of you, you may be able to finish it. Look up Thurman's Cafe and go try out the Thurminator at Thurman's Cafe in campus in Columbus.
Oh, what is it?
For sure.
It's just a massive pile of hamburger. And it's a Thurminator. That's all I can describe it. It's a cool little campus bar. I think the beer's pretty cheap there too, still, from what I remember. So there you go.
It doesn't matter. We're all under 21.
All right. Well, don't drink. It's not good for you.
Yeah, David.
But I ask everybody this, guys, and I'm always interested in how bands come up with their name. But before you answer that, I want to know some of the names that did not make the cut for you guys.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Our first one was that I put up was Kiss Yourself Goodnight. We were sent because I liked emo music. That was my thing throughout high school. I loved screamo, emo, and alternative, so I listened to a lot of like The Used and Hawthorne Heights.
What were we for a while? We were something else for a minute.
We were
Afterthought. Yeah, that's what. I'm glad that is an Afterthought now.
Yeah, we stuck with that for a little bit. Then we changed.
Yeah.
Then they proposed the new name. And at first it was like, then it just like, yeah, that is a really cool name.
Yeah, I got real into like counterculture and philosophy and science and everything. And I'm real into all that stuff now. So I was looking up a bunch of different theories and stuff, and that's where the name came from. But there's notebooks of failed names.
Yeah. We tried picking some out of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, we just like hold books and open up pages and try to pick out sentences, but it doesn't work for some bands. Sometimes it would. They have generators for a lot of styles, but we couldn't find one.
Bastion of sodomy.
Yeah.
That would have been a pretty awesome metal band. I would go see that.
Yeah. Opening up for the Sons of Gargamel. Yeah.
To give you.
Right on. No, I dig the string theory. I think it's a cool name, and I think it's catchy too. I think people are gonna dig it. Now, like I said, the album comes out February 25th, and I believe people can go pre-order this at your website. If people want to find out more about you guys, what you're up to, where can they find out more about you guys, whether it be a social network, website, what have you?
The website, www.thestringtheoryband.com. That's kind of our hub. That's got all of our social media on there.
Yeah, so we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, obviously.
Yeah, it's all there on the site, so that's where people can find everything about us and follow us or like us or what have you.
We're going to push for hipsters on MySpace.
There you go. At String Theory ROK on Twitter. I followed you guys on there as well. So, well, we close out tonight with another single off the album, again, which is titled Falling Like the Sun. Now, the name of this song cracks me up. Pussy Willow Trunk Champ. I don't know if it goes in title with our pre-show conversation with, well, we'll leave that alone. But what can you tell me about this particular track here?
My girlfriend one day, we were talking, and I just had her – I was trying to write a song because I had that riff at the beginning, and I was messing with it in my basement, and I asked her to send me a bunch of random words, and like she sent me like 40-odd random words, and those words were in there, and they all stood out and seemed to just like come together in one of those kind of like surreal kind of ways. It was kind of cool, and like I was just putting it together, and I was just trying to think of different ways to like, you know, make it work. And you know, I really like Zeppelin and all that whole like tongue-in-cheek, like blues tradition thing. And it sounds tongue-in-cheek, but it's not really. It's actually, in truth, a story about just a girl with like these massive, ridiculous thighs that literally just goes to these imaginary tree climbing competitions, and she just wins because she doesn't need to use her hands and everyone else's arms get tired, but she has these super powerful thighs. And it sounds all like it's sexual, and it very well could be, but that's like the whole fun part about it. It's just like a story, but it all sounds like, you know, it's like a innuendo the whole way. It's really like fun to sing because just like the first line, like everyone's just like, yeah.
Right? Yeah, I mean, who doesn't like
pussy,
right?
Everyone just gets excited for the whole pussy thing, and then, you know, then they get confused.
Very well done. Well, Andrew, David, Tristan, best of luck to you guys, man. Definitely keep us in the loop. If anything, more things you guys have coming to lay and down the pike in 2014, dig what you guys are doing. Best of luck to you, and amen. Thanks for stopping in. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Thank you.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Pussy with a trunk champ, climbing up the stage ramp. Just accept it. Tree trunks listens to mayhem funk. She lives there. She comes. She's the one. everyone else falls down. Their arms don't reach around. She uses a strong thighs. Whoa, yeah. Here she comes. Here she comes. Here she comes. Here she comes. She's the one to be. It's a favorite tree. Only climbs the trunk. Leave the branches be. She was out of with ease. Yeah, yeah. Wow, but the widow. Shut down. But the widow. Shut down. I hope she climbs on.
String Theory here on Revelator. That is Pussy Willow, Trunk Champ. Really dig that track. And again, thanks to the guys from the String Theory for stopping in. For more information about this particular episode of Revelator, head on over to omnes.tv. Again, that's omnes.tv. Also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/omnes.tv. Again, that's omnes.tv. Click on episode number 45. And of course, you can find me on Twitter, Ryan_unsigned. And I'm always tweeting, sometimes too much, sometimes funny, sometimes not. And hey, that's just kind of how it goes. But again, special thanks to the guys in the String Theory. Really, really nice young up and coming band. Really solid material. I'm glad we got a chance to interview them here on the show. And you know what? We haven't done this in a while, but here we go. This week in music history. This week in music history, and I wish it was a happier one, but unfortunately it's not. In early hours of February 3rd, 1959, the single-engine 1947 Beechcraft plane crashed in a cornfield near Clear Lake, Iowa, killing everyone on board. When investigators surveyed the wreckage later that day, they learned that the bodies of rock and roll artist Buddy Holly and his tour mates Richie Valens and the Big Bopper were actually on board, including the pilot Roger Peterson. So that's what happened in this week. This week in music history. There you go. Hey, you know what? Super Bowl 48, right? Ah, oh, my gosh. You know, and I predicted it would be a close game. I did pick the Seahawks to win, but I didn't see that coming at all. Oh, my goodness. I don't think it matters. You know what? It doesn't matter who the Seahawks played. If they played like they did Sunday against the Denver Broncos, they were going to win that football game because that defense was outstanding as advertised. And you know what? In an NFL where it's a passing league and everybody gets up and down, they score tons and tons of points. For a team to go out there and dominate on defense, the first time since 1990, Bills versus Giants, it was number one offense versus number one defense in the Super Bowl. And, of course, that particular game, the Giants won because Scott Norwood pulled it, I think, wide right in that game, 1990. Probably one of the most classic Super Bowl moments for sure, unless you're a Buffalo Bills fan, of course. But, wow. Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, the front seven, Averill, Sims, I mean, the list goes on of absolutely outstanding football players. You know what the scary thing is that, Cam Chancellor on that team as well. They have guys that didn't even play. Brandon Bowers, Bruce Irving, they have, like, you know, all pro players that didn't even play in that game or play really this season at all and have the number one defense in the league. That's the scary part. Russell Wilson was outstanding. I would say outstanding, but he was solid, man. He really solid. He was solid all year. What can you say? I mean, the Denver Broncos just got, you know, and I remember Peyton Manning in the post game talking about, you know, using the word embarrassing being derogatory. No, you guys got humiliated on the most widely watched TV broadcast all year. Humiliated. Devastated. It's like I think Seattle let them score just because they felt sorry for you. I heard the buzz on the sidelines with the Seattle Seahawks was they were a little mad that Pete Carroll, who in college was known to run up the score, they wanted to run up the score. They took their foot off the gas. That's the scary part. They went up 29-0 in that game, the start of the third quarter, and they took their foot off the gas and still scored 42, or was it 42, 43, something like that? 42-8, I believe, 43-8. Took their foot off the gas at 43-8. That was an old-fashioned ass-kicking. And Seattle, there's nothing for me to think that they are not going to be back there next year. Now, the NFC is pretty tough. There's some good teams there. They play in a tough division with Arizona. The Rams, I think, going to be much better. Obviously, San Francisco is a pretty solid team. The Saints, Green Bay, and there's some teams in the NFC that are pretty solid. But, man, I think Seattle really is head and shoulders above everybody in the NFL, and they proved it. I mean, that was an outstanding performance and total domination in all facets of the game. Mike, I don't know if you have anything to add there. I don't know if you had a chance to skim the game or not. It wasn't much of a game, but your take, man.
Well, let's just put it this way. I watched the first half.
Yeah.
I tuned in to the second half, but I thought, man, I could be more productive at this point. I mean, because it was like watching a curb stomp.
Yeah, it was. Being a Peyton Manning. I like Peyton Manning. You never know because I've seen that guy come back. You know, so there was a little hint there in the second half. Like, well, it's only, you know, 20-something points. Peyton Manning has come back from worse. You know, and then they ran that kickoff back, and you're like, oh, this is over. This is way over. You know, and the halftime show, Bruno Mars, I thought was great. Chili Peppers, they caught a lot of heat for not plugging in their instruments. Whatever. You know, what do you expect? You know, but I thought it was, you know, considering how halftime shows have gone the last several years, I thought it was pretty good. That Bruno Mars was outstanding, really. Very, very talented young musician. But I really like the post game with the Super Bowl MVP. Check this out.
I always imagine myself making great plays, but you never think about being MVP.
Investigate 9/11. 9/11 was perpetrated by people within our own government.
I love it. Sims goes here. This is great.
All right. Is everybody all right? check his press pass.
I love that. Is everybody all right? Somebody check his press pass. With all the security and everything going on at the Super Bowl in New York City, mind you. This guy just runs up to the podium while they're interviewing post-game the Super Bowl MVP and grabs the microphone from him. I mean, that's one of those...
Kapuya! Kapuya!
That's right, baby. That's a Kapuya moment right there. Outstanding. Yeah, what can you say? On TV, on SportsCenter, just, you know, grabs dude Mike. Investigate 9/11. But yeah, good stuff. That wraps up the show tonight. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Again, special thanks to, and shout out to the String Theory for stopping in. Pick up their new album, which comes out here in several weeks. Head on over to the site, omnis.tv. Click on the Revelator logo. It'll be right there. Click on episode 45. And definitely, if you're listening for the first time, go back and check the back catalog as well, including great interviews and guests such as Clutch, Orionthe, Pop Evil, Candlelight Red, The Black Lodge, and a lot of other artists maybe you are not familiar with that you might really dig. So encourage you to do that. Next week, we have a really awesome band called The Standstills from Canada. Really, really great band. Looking forward to having them on next week. Hey, it seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so, everybody.
This was episode 45. Pussy Willow Was an Inside Job. For show notes or links to topics discussed on this episode of Revelator, or to experience previous episodes, head on over to omnes.tv, that's omnes.tv, and click on Revelator. Thanks for listening.